Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show. It's Monday, it's the 20th of May 2019. I hope you're all keeping really well and you've all had a great weekend. On today's show, in a moment, we are going to be talking about the dangers of alcohol misuse. We'll also, towards the end of the show, we'll be talking about a condition called metabolic syndrome. I'm sure some of you have heard of this term metabolic syndrome, but not many people actually know what it is and how it's caused and what you can do about it if you are at risk. And in between that, we have a special guest interview this morning. We have Lee Sad from Safety and Management Solutions. And Lee's going to be talking more about what he does and also about mental health. But Lee, it's great to have you on the show this morning.
Yeah, hello, Neil. Thank you very much for having me.
And I look forward to having a chat with you in about 20 minutes or so. So a quick disclaimer before we kick off the show. The purpose of the Health Matters Radio Show is to provide you with competent information on the subject matters covered and to help educate and inform you in ways that you can improve your own health. However, this is on the understanding that I'm not engaged in providing medical advice and the content in the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. If you have any concerns about your general health or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111 first or speaking with your local pharmacist. All the content is provided for general information only, and I encourage you to do your own research on the topics that we discuss. And the show is based on my knowledge, my research, my experience and my opinion, and I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the content of the show. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, you can search the Health Matters Radio Show and you can follow the show's Facebook page. You'll be able to listen again to this show and all previous 61 Health Matters shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk, and also on the show's iTunes podcast feed. Go to iTunes, search the Health Matters Radio Show, and you can subscribe to the show's podcast and listen to all previous shows there too. Okay, so we're going to talk for the next 10, 15 minutes or so about alcohol misuse. So we're not necessarily talking about alcoholism here. We're talking about someone who is in that place where they haven't quite got control of their alcohol consumption, but they're not a full-blown alcoholic. So alcohol misuse simply means drinking excessively and more than what is considered to be the lower risk limit. Okay, so as we know, alcohol is measured in units, and most people actually don't know what a unit is. And very simply, a unit is 10 milliliters of pure alcohol. So half a pint of lower to normal strength lager or beer or cider is about one unit. A single small shot measure, so around 25 millilitres of spirits, is about one unit. And a small glass, so 125 ml of wine, is about 1.5 units. So government guidelines suggest that we shouldn't regularly drink more than 14 units of alcohol per week. So to put that into perspective, if you're a wine drinker, a typical bottle of white wine, which is around 12% proof, is about 14 units of alcohol. So 9 units in a bottle, about 14 units a week. So about a bottle and a half of wine, white wine a week. Obviously spirits are more, and some fortified wines can be more than 9 units in a bottle. So if you do drink around 14 units a week, then it's best to try to spread these out evenly over 3 or more days. Try not to binge drink. Try to have several alcohol-free days each week. So don't drink every single day of the week, because regular or frequent drinking, which is the definition of alcohol misuse, causes some serious health risks. And some of these risks are things like heart disease, stroke, liver cancer, bowel cancer, mouth cancer, breast cancer, and pancreatitis. So those are the health conditions that if you drink alcohol on a long-term continuous basis, even though you might not define yourself as being an alcoholic, misusing alcohol can cause some serious health issues as things progress. In addition to the health problems, there are also social problems that we can face as well. So these can be things like unemployment. It might lead to a breakdown of a relationship. It could lead to domestic abuse. It could lead to child abuse. It could lead to homelessness. So there's lots of other reasons. If you do consume perhaps a bit too much alcohol, there's lots of other reasons apart from your health where you might want to try to get it under control. And obviously alcohol misuse and alcohol abuse can over time lead on to full-blown alcoholism. And that's obviously when things get really, really serious. And a dependent drinker, are you dependent? Well, if you're thinking about alcohol a lot, then possibly you are a dependent drinker. And normally a dependent drinker will experience physical and psychological withdrawal symptoms when they suddenly cut down or try to stop drinking. And these can be things like the shakes. I'm sure some of you have heard of the shakes where you have hand tremors. They can suffer from sweating. They can have visual hallucinations. They can suffer from depression, anxiety, and also insomnia as well. And these dependent drinkers, they're able to tolerate really high levels of alcohol in amounts that would dangerously affect or even kill some people. It's only because their body has had to adjust to it so that they don't die, that they can tolerate these really high levels of alcohol, but that's not a good thing. And often what they'll do is they'll often drink to get relief from those withdrawal symptoms. So essentially, when you get on that alcohol misuse wagon, you'll often drink just to feel normal. So it's quite a serious condition. So if you are drinking too much, you might spot some of these signs. If you feel that maybe you should be cutting down on your drinking, if you're conscious that maybe you are drinking too much, then that might be a sign to cut down a bit on alcohol. Maybe other people have spotted your drinking habits. Maybe it's your children. Maybe it's your spouse or partner or husband or wife. They might actually notice your drinking patterns, and they might be dropping in to conversations or directly criticizing the amount that you're drinking, or perhaps the frequency that you're drinking. Maybe that might be a sign that you're drinking too much alcohol. If you start to feel guilty or bad about drinking, I'm not saying for a moment everyone needs to be teetotal, far from it. But it's obviously about drinking in moderation and being in control of it. And we often lose control and start feeling guilty and bad about our drinking habits, and that could be a sign that you might have a problem. And also, if you wake up in the morning, and I think they call it the hair of the dog, where perhaps the first thing you think about is having a drink, or you do need a drink in the morning to steady your nerves, to get you ready for the day, or perhaps in your mind to get rid of a hangover, then you may have a drinking problem that perhaps you need to address. So there are some short-term effects. Those long-term effects that I mentioned, liver cancer, liver problems, heart disease, those are long-term effects of continual excessive alcohol consumption. But we're going to talk for a moment about some of the short-term effects of alcohol consumption. And this is good to know, not just for people that have an alcohol issue, but people that just do drink on a regular basis, or perhaps they drink on a Saturday night. And it's good to know what these units of alcohol will actually do to your body. Because again, I'm a very big fan that education is power, and knowing what it does might make you think twice about not just about drinking, but perhaps the amount that you drink. So as I mentioned, one unit of alcohol is half a pint of beer, one shot, and a small glass of wine is 1.5 units. So if you drink 1 to 2 units, that speeds up your heart rate and your blood vessels start to expand. And this gives you that warm, sociable, talkative feeling that you associate with moderate drinking. So yeah, that's quite nice just to get into the mood, to just relax and just to chill out. 4 to 6 units, and now we're talking maybe half a bottle to maybe 3/4 of a bottle of white wine. At this point, your brain and your nervous system starts to become affected. It begins to affect the part of your brain that's associated with judgment and decision making. And this can make you feel a bit more reckless and a bit more uninhibited. And at this point, the alcohol also impairs the cells of your nervous system, which can make you feel lightheaded, and it can adversely affect your reaction time and also your coordination. 8 to 9 units. So now we're looking at about 4 pints of beer, perhaps, or maybe a bottle of white wine. So at 8 to 9 units, your reaction times will become significantly slower than normal. Your speech will begin to slur, and your vision, you may start to lose focus intermittently. And at this point, your liver is now overloaded. So particularly if you drink this over a short space of time, your liver will be in a position where it's unable to remove all the alcohol from your system at the rate that you're drinking it, and you'll probably wake up with a hangover in the morning. 10 to 12 units. Well, 10 to 12 units, now your coordination is highly impaired, and this obviously places you at serious risk of having an accident if you were silly enough to jump in a car and drive. And also at this level, the alcohol is having a real serious depressive effect on your body and also your mind, and that actually then makes you start to feel drowsy. And at this point, we're reaching toxic levels of alcohol. So now your body will bring the kidneys into play, and it will try to pass out this excess alcohol in your urine. That will often make you feel badly dehydrated, and you'll probably get a headache and a hangover in the morning. And at this point, if you're drinking 10 to 12 units of alcohol, you definitely don't want to be driving the following day, because your body will deal with about 1 unit of alcohol per hour. So if you drank, say, 12 units of alcohol at midnight, you will still probably be over the limit by 11, 12 o'clock the following day. So driving the night before is actually a really popular time that the police catch people that are over the limit, not because they've been drinking in the morning, but because they had a heavy session the night before. And also at 10 to 12 units, it really does upset your digestion. So that can cause nausea, vomiting, and also diarrhea as well. And over 12 units, well, now we are at serious risk of alcohol poisoning, particularly if you've drunk this amount over a short period of time. As I mentioned, it takes your body about an hour to get rid of 1 unit of alcohol from your body. And this now at 12 units plus, the alcohol starts to interfere with the body's automatic functions. So things like breathing, heart rate, and also the control of the gag reflex gets affected at 12 plus units. And that puts you at risk of choking as well. And actually, long-term alcohol poisoning can put you into a coma and ultimately can lead to death, which obviously is not good. So as I mentioned, there are these long-term effects of alcohol misuse. It's not just about being an alcoholic. It's about being alcohol dependent, and it's about losing control of the amount of alcohol that we drink and the frequency in a week that we do drink it. So just to remind you of some of these things, certain cancers, it affects your blood pressure, it affects your cholesterol, it affects your brain, your nervous system, your heart, your liver, your pancreas. It can lead to heart attack, it can lead to strokes. It can also, there's a link between long-term alcohol consumption and also dementia as well, and depression and mental health issues. So there's lots of reasons to get to grips with your alcohol issues if you have them. And perhaps if you can recognise with some of those symptoms, or you think maybe you're drinking a little bit too much, the first port of call could be your doctor. And from there, they may be able to recommend a certain course of action too. So please take it seriously. There are loads of benefits to cutting down alcohol consumption. You'll feel better. Your health will improve. Your physical health will improve. Your psychological health will improve. Your brain health, your heart health, your liver health. And that's just to start with. You know, when you look at the social issues around alcohol consumption, then if you've got relationship issues, they could improve as well. And also, people don't realise how much alcohol affects the skin. Because it makes you dehydrated, the skin dries out and it becomes less elastic. And actually, if you do drink a lot of alcohol, it can age you much quicker than normal. You'll also save money. You won't be spending so much on alcohol, so that's a good thing. And also, you'll lose weight. Alcohol is very high in calories, and those calories are what we call empty calories. So there's no nutritional value in those calories at all. And the way it works is the body will process and store alcohol as sugar, which eventually, if that sugar isn't used, will convert into fat. So people that drink perhaps more than they should do will tend to put on weight as well. So I encourage you, if you can identify with any of those issues, then please do seek professional health. It's good that you recognise it. The next step is to do something about it. So after the music break, we are going to go on to our guest interview with Lee. But to take us there, we have a song by Muse and it's Undisclosed Desires. Was Muse and Undisclosed Desires. What a great song. You're listening to the Health Matters radio show with me, Neil De Silva. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, if you search the Health Radio Show or at Health Radio Show, you can follow the show's Twitter feed. On Facebook, you can like the show's Facebook page. Simply search the Health Matters radio show and you can find it on Facebook. You can listen again to this show on the media page of my website or on the show's iTunes podcast feed. Go to iTunes and search the Health Matters radio show, and you can also subscribe. So when I upload new shows, you'll get an automatic notification. And if you'd like to contact me away from social media, you can do so through my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. Okay, so on to our special guest interview of the morning. As I mentioned earlier, we have Lee Sad from Safety and Management Solutions. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Neil.
It's great to have you on the show this morning.
Thank you very much.
And we're going to cover some of the things that Lee does and what his business offers. And we're going to have a chat about mental health as well, because I don't know if many of you were aware, but last week was Mental Health Awareness Week. And as many of the regular listeners to the show will know, I'm a great mental health advocate. As a Samaritan volunteer, obviously, I'm very involved in that. And I think it's a very important thing that for a long time has been stigmatized. And I think it's coming out of the cupboard now, it's coming out of the shadows, and I think we are much more open to talk about mental health issues. So we're going to cover some of the things that Lee does in conjunction with mental health. So, Lee, let's start at the beginning. Give us a bit of an idea of your background and kind of your journey up to what you're doing now.
Well, my journey was fairly standard, really. When I was 18, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I sort of fell into working in the transport industry. The transport industry, it was good. It served the purpose, and I sort of enjoyed what I was doing. I got my HGV license, and I got to travel Europe and things like that. But from there, I really sort of fancied a career change. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. At the time, actually, my dad, he was just retiring from the police force, and he decided to start his own safety company. So doing health and safety, sort of, there was a sort of good segue into that. So I decided to take on what's called the NEBOSH qualification, where I could be a safety practitioner. So I did that, and I got a job as an in-house safety advisor, which I'd done for 4 years. And as my dad's business grew, I joined 4 years after starting into safety, and we sort of started working together. We started to develop the training side of the company, and since then it's grown from the four people that were employed at the time to as many as 8 employees at the time.
So your dad was in the police, eh?
He was in the police. He was an inspector in the Kent Firearms.
Ah, so he wasn't tempted to follow in his footsteps?
I thought about it for a little bit, but there was, at the time, the recruitment it wasn't a big recruitment drive going on. And I thought about it, but then other things just got in the way, and I started to go down other avenues, really.
Yeah, and you travelled around Europe as well. Fantastic.
I did, yes.
So what's your favourite part of Europe?
I did like Scandinavia. Scandinavia was very nice, but then the novelty wears off quite quickly when you're doing driving. I think having 400 miles bare right on your sat nav was was quite a sort of low point, and also too much time around the M25. I think in this country, it wasn't all glamour and it wasn't all nice driving.
I've done that drive down to Spain a few times, and when you look at the sat nav and it says 1600 kilometers to go, and you're kind of thinking, oh really?
Well, at 56 miles an hour, 400 miles is a day, so you just turn it off.
That must be painful. So obviously, then you went from being a driver. You saw that interest in health and safety. So, what was it about health and safety that sort of drew you towards that type of industry?
It's very varied. There's a lot to do. Obviously, as in transport, you're only sort of really driving, and you're just sort of doing that sort of work. But in safety, there's so many different avenues to go down, because you got the fire side, which was really interesting. Mm-hmm. I did always enjoy talking to people, being in front of people. I've sort of got a bit of a background as a musician and stuff like that, so sort of being in front of people was never really a problem for me. So I've done a training education course, and I decided I quite enjoy this. I want to be a trainer, so I decided to go down that sort of road, and I really enjoy that interaction that I have with people.
I've known you for a couple of years now, and shy isn't a word that I would say of you.
I don't think anyone's ever said that of me. That's not an issue.
Yeah, I mean, if you're used to being on stage as well, then, you're fairly used to getting in front of people and, sort of, talking to them. And
yeah, it's never really fazed me, to be honest.
So with that career change, you mentioned that you had that interest in health and safety. What made you take a lead role within the business?
I said it was just sort of natural progression. I introduced a lot of products into the business.
Okay.
And sort of took the lead on that. A little bit. A lot of them were gambles. But they've tended to work. I've had a couple of things that haven't worked, but then I've just sort of learned from them. So just sort of that sort of natural progression on, really, and it's just sort of something that I've just enjoyed doing, and sort of taking that lead role again was just the natural progression.
So before you became a director, the the range of services that the company offered was more limited than it is now. You've introduced these new things into the business?
Yeah, I'd say limited. It suited the purpose for the time, because what happened is, in terms of the business, we grew a lot when we started doing things like we went down the ISO accreditation route.
Okay.
And since then, we started to attract some really good clients. Mm-hmm. And with the sort of larger clients that we're getting, they obviously needed a much more varied product base. And I'm quite good at reading the market and seeing what's new out there and what organizations need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. I think adaptation is really important. And, you know, the companies that survive and thrive are the ones that can move with the market. And obviously, clearly, you've done that. Mm. Let's talk a little bit more about the services that that your business offers. I know, obviously, you do consultancy, but perhaps you can talk a little bit more about what the consultancy is, perhaps the events that you do, the workshops that you run, and then we'll have a chat about the mental health side.
Yeah, sure. The services that we do is, obviously, we are primarily a safety consultancy. We've helped out organisations with their policies, with their risk assessments, just a lot of times hand-holding clients, because health and safety can be a little bit of a minefield. Mm. And I get so many organisations coming to me saying, what do I need to be legally compliant, or what do I need to move forward? We've helped organisations get through accreditations that have secured them large contracts, and also the monitoring side of things that has helped them keep those contracts. As well as a number of events that we've run. Mm-hmm. We do the Kent Show every year, which is a very busy part. That's all of us, every single member of the staff, every single member of the company, actually on the ground at the Kent Show, which is quite a large thing. Mm-hmm. We sort of do the countdown to it every year.
Okay.
So as well as the smaller events as well, like Mayfair on Broadstairs at just down by Broadstairs on Victoria Parade, the Broadstairs Food Festival, mm-hmm. which is always quite a nice one to it's always quite a nice one to go to. Mm-hmm. Also all the training that we do a wide range of training courses. We do a wide range of e-learning courses for people who can't get into the classroom for the week. We do a lot of first aid. Our main sort of course that we do is the NEBOSH course, so we do train other people who want to go into the safety sector.
Okay, and what is NEBOSH?
NEBOSH is the National Examination Board of Occupational Safety and Health.
Ah, there you go.
Yes.
Okay.
I have to make sure I know what that one means in case anyone ever asks me that. But basically, it's a level 3 qualification that allows you to become a safety practitioner. So you get like letters after your name and that sort of stuff, and it's that sort of it's that real qualification you need to make that career change.
Excellent. So you're doing lots of things, keeping very busy, which is good to see. And obviously, one of the things that we really want to talk about today is the mental health side. Now, as I mentioned, last week was Mental Health Awareness Week. Lots of things going on in the media, in the press. And it is an area that does, it does need to have the stigma broken. I think for a long time, there's been a lot of stigma around mental health. And I think now we are, as a society, I think we are coming to terms with the fact it needs to be spoken about. And also, there's a lot more people that struggle with mental health issues than we would like to admit. I think the last statistics that I saw, and you may be able to correct me on this one, but it was about 1 in 4 people, 25% of people will suffer with some mental health issues over. I like to call them mental health issues and not an illness. But, you know, whichever terminology people prefer to use, but 25% of people, you know, 1 in 4 people are going to have some sort of mental health issue over the next 12 months, which is quite scary.
Yeah, it's very scary. And also, it's like you say about the stigma, it may not be entirely accurate, because that's the sort of ones that they measure. So it could be further people coming forward. But what's really sort of helped in this day and age is, obviously, Prince William was doing his show last night around the stigmas and around everything attached. Mm-hmm. Football players are coming forward with issues that they've had to deal with in the past and all sorts. So the stigma's starting to break down. I think a lot of people don't like to be seen as weak, or they don't like to be seen as that. But that is absolutely not the case.
Particularly men.
Mm. And the suicide statistics around men is absolutely terrifying. 3 times more likely to commit suicide than females. So it's very, very scary. Obviously, I've been dealing with it for a number of years around training, particular, because I train in a lot of industries. As I said, I come from a transport background. I come from a construction background, done a lot of work around construction. And these are probably some of the worst industries for this stigma.
Because it's a mostly male-dominated industry?
Yeah, there's that sort of get on with the job and and do that.
And I would guess the hours are long and the stress is high.
Yeah, the stresses are sort of the stresses are a little bit easy to disbelieve, really. But
yeah.
every person working at the construction are working to deadlines. They're suffering from lack of work-life balance. They're starting work at 6 o'clock in the morning, coming back at 7 o'clock in the evening, not having enough time with their families, not doing stuff. And I always say this to people that I work with, not doing the stuff that they want to do, more doing the stuff that they have to do is one of the key factors to it.
And there's also that stress of, you know, obviously wanting to keep your job and hold your job down. And, you know, in the current climate, job security is, you know, it's not great at the best of times. So people end up doing more hours to keep their employers happy. But obviously that puts a lot of stress on them. And as you mentioned, they don't see their family as much. And it kind of can cascade out of control, can't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of demands. There's a number of industries. There's always people are rarely away from work. More and more people are putting their emails on their mobile phones, which means they're not detaching themselves from the work that they're doing. And they're not having enough downtime on their work. And I do say to a lot of people, when I start training sessions, I do try to get that point across that there's nothing, apart from sleep, no one does anything for more than 40 hours a week apart from work. And work is the key element to it. And that is, again, what's causing a lot of mental health conditions in their lives. And it's about identifying it. And also it's about admitting it to themselves sometimes and finding different methods of dealing with it in their own time.
And I think a lot of people mistake mental health issues with just suicide. You know, as you mentioned, the suicide rate in the UK, I think it's one person every 90 minutes commits suicide in this country. I think statistically, for every one person that is successful, and I use that word very, very advisedly, for one person that actually goes ahead and is successful in committing suicide, I think around 20 actually try it and they're not successful at that point. Yeah. So it is a frighteningly high proportion of people. But mental health issues can form, you know, it's quite a big spectrum, isn't it?
Yes.
So obviously at one end, and the more, you know, the more serious ends, we have like schizophrenia, mm-hmm. psychosis, and ultimately things like suicide. But they can form, that, or mental health issues can manifest in lots of different ways, can't they?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And one thing, just going back onto suicide quickly, one thing that I've spoken to a lot of people who've known people who've committed suicide, and the thing that they always mention is they just wouldn't expect it of that person.
Mm.
And I think that, to me, is a sign of somebody trying to sort of withhold these conditions and not sort of saying about it. Again, for fear of feeling weak or for fear of just sort of being ostracised from a group.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's lots of different ranges. Depression, anxiety are the most common.
Mm.
What's quite worrying is some people can't identify the symptoms of it as well.
Yeah.
So there's to me, that strikes there's not enough awareness in what these conditions are.
Absolutely, which is obviously where you come in.
Well, hopefully. Hopefully, yeah.
So let's have a chat about mental health in the workplace. So if you're an employer, you've got staff that you're responsible for. Why do you believe that mental health in the workplace is so important these days?
I think it's important in everything. I think that if you go back to the Health and Safety at Work Act, it's the health, safety and welfare of all members of staff. So employers do have that responsibility to ensure that members of staff are healthy, are being looked after.
Yeah.
I think that also there is the business case side of things as well. So, for instance, mental health conditions has cost the UK about £105 billion to the UK economy. So there is that sort of business side to it as well.
Yeah.
But also staff retention and also that common law duty of care that we have towards all members of staff. It should be something that is looked at as seriously as everyday health and safety concerns, such as manual handling and trips, slips and falls.
And I think from a reputational point of view as well, if an employer has got a good reputation for looking after their staff, both physically and also mentally as well, then that reputation precedes them. And you know, things like recruitment costs, high turnover of staff, they can all be reduced because there is that, you know, that perception that the employer cares about their employees.
Absolutely. There is a very, very big business case, to be held. And one thing we always follow around managing anything to do with safety is you've got that legal obligation, as mentioned, with the Health and Safety at Work Act, the financial obligation around the business side, and that moral obligation. I don't think anybody wants to be responsible for any pain and suffering to a fellow human being.
And more companies are jumping on not jumping on, they're becoming much more aware of the physical health of their staff. I wouldn't say jumping on a bandwagon, that would be incorrect, because I think it's a very important thing. And jumping on a bandwagon kind of gives the impression it's a phase, and this isn't a phase. This is a movement where employers, or responsible employers, are becoming much, much more conscious about the well-being of their staff. But lots of employers are focusing quite rightly on the physical side, which is kind of where I come in. But the really clued up employers are starting to realise that the well-being of their staff is actually more than just the physical side. It's the mental side as well. It's the things that they can't see that are as of much importance, if not more important, than the physical side of their employer's well-being.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. When I do deal with clients, I deal with a lot of training sessions that I do. The easiest thing in the world is to deal with the visible stuff.
Mm.
I mean, there's lots of talks, there's lots of training. We invest a lot of time and training into things like good housekeeping, into manual handling and stuff like that. But
how to lift a box.
these sort of things are needed without a doubt. But what is out there that's really causing pain and suffering to individuals? And it is the mental health side of things, without a doubt. And it's also if you invest in these well-being programs, the business can get a lot more from their members of staff.
Yeah.
But individuals at the same time need to appreciate what they are doing.
Yeah,
they need to sort of take a bit of responsibility, and they need to reflect on how they're feeling. They need to talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
They need to come forward with these conditions they might have. And organisations need to come up with policies and with first aiders in mental health so that people can have that avenue to do that. Because a lot of time people just won't talk about it for fear, again, of being ostracised from the group, or for fear of ridicule.
Mm, absolutely. So let's go on to mental health first aiders. So if you are an employer, how can you help employers to improve the mental health of their staff? What services do you offer as a business?
As a business, we offer three levels of mental health, first aid for mental health. The first one being mental health awareness, which some organisations are looking at rolling right across their organisation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, telling people that it's okay not to be okay sometimes.
Oh, absolutely.
It's okay to have these. You are one in four people do, and if you need that, if you need that help, or if you need that guidance, you know where to go to.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is the first aid for mental health, which is a 1-day course, and that is again just sort of aimed at identifying anybody who might be showing signs of any of these. Conditions.
Okay.
So, for instance, if somebody isn't the way that they normally are, if there is any telltale signs, if there's anything that they can help, mm-hmm. can help with, then they know where to go. And the third one is also to do with supervising for mental health, and that would be where maybe someone at a management level or a supervisory level could implement the policies, can implement the procedures around it. So, having a better well-being structure around an organisation.
Okay, so from a business point of view, I mean, what size of businesses, generally speaking, would you be looking to attract onto these?
I think all size of business should be aware of the mental health for first aid.
So even for a small business that employs, you know, maybe 2, 3, 4 employees,
yeah.
Then, you know, the mental health awareness would be perfect.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And even for like construction contractors, I personally think that it would be involved in the bidding process soon, into the tendering process, onto large projects. And also for any organisation that employs over 10, 20 people, I think that it should be treated as first aiders, where you have first aiders.
Yeah, do you think at some point it will become a legal obligation to cover this?
The legislation around mental health is quite outdated, in my opinion. Mm. It very much talks about like sectioning and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know,
that sort of
extreme cases. I think there will be legislation coming in around it, around the well-being. I would certainly champion for any legislation around it,
mm-hmm.
because I think that as a country, I think that our health and safety has only really improved because of statute laws coming in place, like the Health and Safety Work Act and and stuff like that. So I think that there is a space for having legislation. But I think, in answer, I think there will be, yeah.
So the progressive companies are going to take the lead. They're going to get involved ahead of it becoming a legal obligation, and they will be ahead of the curve from those companies that are then made to do it by law.
Yeah, I think that's quite a good diagnosis. Actually.
And you also do mental health first aid courses for individuals as well, workshops?
Yeah, we do. On our website, www.soundslimited.co.uk, we have open courses coming up. We're looking at running one a month at the moment, and we've had quite a bit of interest come forward with that. And it's just a case of really, raising that awareness and how they can help. Mm-hmm. How they can help individuals around. And I'm hoping that it does become as popular as first aid courses courses are, because I've had people who don't need to do first aid courses for work. They've had to do it because they're having children, or they're going to do they're playing football and they want to help out just the passerby in the street.
Yeah.
Or Good Samaritan type of work.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there is this feeling now that when we talk about physical first aid training, it's one of those skills that you everyone should have, but you hope you're never going to need it, but it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think the way things are going from what you're saying is that mental health first aid training is going to follow the same route, where it's one of those things, it is a good skill to have, to be aware of the mental health of people around you, not just in the workplace, but also friends and family as well.
Yeah, without a doubt, absolutely. And I've known a few people who've gone through bereavements and along that sort of line. And the thing that's always on their minds is, could I've done more to stop that? Could I've seen that from occurring? And it goes along those sort of lines. These sort of telltale signs that people have, and at the time, nobody spotted them. But they were there, and they might be very subtle, but it could be that any sort of bit of training that anybody does might identify these signs and hopefully do something about it.
Mm. I'm a huge advocate of mental health training, absolutely right. So Lee, tell me a bit more about your plans for this year. Obviously, you've got lots of things going on, which is really exciting. You've got the mental health first aid courses coming up. What other plans have you got towards the middle and end of 2019 into 2020?
Plodding along, really. We've got we do have a lot of things going in place. My training coordinator normally shudders when I say that I might be introducing something new, so I'm giving her a little bit of a break at the moment. So I'm not going to be introducing anything new in a couple of months. But if something does come along, sorry Nicola, I may be putting something else in place. But at the moment, I've got no plans to do that. What's interesting is, coming from a transport background, we've been doing driver CPC, which is compulsory training for lorry drivers. That's finishing in September, so that's taken a lot of strain. That's taken a lot of strain off me, off as an organisation. But hopefully, the first aid for mental health courses might sort of plug that gap into them. Brilliant. In terms of them lost training days that we're doing. And we're constantly working very hard to get people through their NEBOSH exams. So we have an ongoing, as well as servicing clients. I've got two very good advisors who look after the clients for us and stuff like that. So it's exciting times.
Excellent,
really.
Excellent. So just in summary, just to go over it again, who would be your ideal client, and why do you think they should come to you in particular?
Ideal client, really. I like clients who they have a nice mixture of knowing what they want to do, but also not knowing how to do it, or sort of not sort of knowing where to go.
Yeah.
I like clients who listen. I do like clients who listen. As I said, I've got two very good advisors. They know their stuff. And one of the biggest issues and one of the biggest hardships they have to go through is when organisations don't change, when they don't see the value in what they're actually sort of trying to put across. An organisation who would invest in their staff.
Yep.
So an organisation who knows that they're good, but could also improve at the same sort of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I quite like a challenge. And so an organisation within a challenging industry is always quite exciting and fun.
Brilliant. Excellent. So if people want to get in contact with you, what's your preferred method of contact?
Preferred method is through our website, www.samslimited.co.uk.
So that's samsltd.co.uk.
Yes, .co.uk. Mm-hmm. And always on the phone, on Fannett 821406, as we're based down in Ramsgate, down in Manston, but we do cover a wide area. And also, we've got lots of. We try to be nice and fresh with our social media.
Yep.
We put a lot of videos in there, and we do a lot of, funny stuff, and we try to just sort of keep it nice and fresh. So there's a nice Facebook page for everybody to like.
So you're good at giving away things like hints and tips and things like that.
Yeah. Well, I've just finished last week recording little 4-minute video shots of me just in front of a whiteboard, just going through a few sort of bits. So that's always nice.
Brilliant.
But then we got a Twitter account, but Twitter's just completely lost on me. So
I do it. I'm not quite sure why I do it, but I do it. And also they can contact you with you on LinkedIn and also on Facebook as well.
Yes, we're all through that, yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you, Lee. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been really good to find out more about what you do.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. After the break, we are going to continue the discussion. We're going to have a chat about metabolic syndrome. But to take us there, we have a song, a classic from the 80s, and it's Mr. Mister. That was Mr. Mister and Broken Wings. You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds on Twitter, at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, search the Health Matters Radio Show and you can follow the show's Facebook page and you can like the page and get regular updates. You can listen again to this show and previous show on the show's iTunes podcast. Go to iTunes, search the Health Matters Radio Show and you can subscribe. And you can also contact me and listen to previous shows as well via my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. So do you want to cover a condition called metabolic syndrome? What I'll do is I'll cover this in more detail on next week's show, because it is actually an important subject that people need to be aware of. This thing called metabolic syndrome is a relatively new phenomenon that wasn't really around sort of 30, 40 years ago, but it's affecting so many people. It's estimated that about 1 in 4 people in the UK have this condition called metabolic syndrome. And essentially what metabolic syndrome is, it's the name for a group of risk factors that raises your risk for things like heart disease, blood vessel disease, stroke, and type 2 diabetes. So it's a condition that comes from a number of other conditions together. So all these things act together, and when on their own, they're not very good. But obviously, when you've got 2 or 3 of these things, it can have a massive impact on your quality of life and your overall health. Now, some of these you can control through things like weight management, exercise, managing what you eat, your diet, and so on. And some you can't control. So age has an impact on metabolic syndrome. As you get older, you become at a higher risk of developing it. So things that can affect this thing called metabolic syndrome is if you're carrying a lot of abdominal fat. So we've covered abdominal fat on a previous show. So it's fat around the organs, has a massive impact on your health. High cholesterol, or if you're taking medication for high cholesterol, whether that's triglycerides or for bad cholesterol. If you've got high blood pressure, or you're taking medication for high blood pressure, you are at risk. And also, if you have high blood sugar, or again, you're taking medication to bring your blood sugar down, you are at risk. Now, if you've got one of those conditions, doesn't mean that you have metabolic syndrome. The general rule of thumb is, though, if you've got 3 of those, so you're carrying too much body fat, if you've got high cholesterol, if you've got high blood pressure, or if you are type 2 diabetic, then if you've got 3 or more of those risk factors, then you are at serious risk of this thing called metabolic syndrome. But time has caught up with us for today's show. So what we'll do is on next week's show, we'll cover more about metabolic syndrome and we can look at the symptoms and we can look at ways that we can deal with it. So we are going to wrap the show up now. It's almost time to finish. I'd like to thank you for listening. I'd like to thank Lee again for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
I'll put Lee's contact details on the show's Facebook page when I do a bit of post promotion. And if you'd like to come on the show, as Lee has done today, and just talk about your business and what you do and how you can help people, then please contact me through social media or via my website. And we'll see about having you on as a guest on a future show in the coming months. A quick reminder, if you'd like to contact me, please do so through my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And after the last song, we have the Channel Radio News and Weather. So and until the same time next week, have a great week, stay happy, stay healthy, and I will catch you again next Monday.
Is a bloom shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rest.